we are doing a special early edition. We're on the road traveling. In fact, we're heading to the Mac Center first off for to get ready for next year's CMC. And then when we leave there, we'll be heading down to GATT. So we're looks like we've got a decent number of calls right now. But if you want to jump in and join us, if you press one on your phone right now, we'll get to you. If you wait, maybe not. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all, press one on your phone. We're going to go ahead and get started. Here we go.
In the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We are back out on the road again. We are off on a couple missions this time. We'll be on the road about 3 weeks total, I think. We are heading to the Mac Center in Council Bluffs, Iowa, to start really getting some final details done on the 2016 CMC. Now, that's not till next May, but this is a big event. This is how long it takes to plan and put together an event this big, and we want to make sure everything's right, so we are heading there to start that process. And once we pull out of Council Bluffs, we'll be heading straight south down to Dallas for the Great American Truck Show. So we are hoping to see you there. Right now, we are going to do what we do here, which is take your calls and answer your questions. We're going to head off to the phones. We're going to start off in Nebraska. James, welcome to the program.
I have two questions about diet and one about the fuel tax. My first question has to do with what kind of bars to order, because I have like the Kind bars, and the only one I found that does not have peanut butter and dark chocolate, and as we know, as Fockers, we don't eat rice because they're a grain. So but I was wanting to go over a couple of ingredients in here and whether or not they're an issue, or do you if you have a completely different recommended bar to use altogether.
Okay, go ahead with the ingredients.
Okay, let's see. It goes through GMO, non-GMO glucose, palm kernel oil, chicory root fiber, tapioca starch, soy lactulin. The rest of them is just, you know, things you'd recognize,
right,
like peanuts and almonds,
yeah,
salt and things like that.
You know,
are any of those ingredients a concern?
No, here's the thing on those. I mean, if we were eating them in large amounts, it might be a problem. Or if you're just being so strict, you don't want anything. But I'm a little more of a realist. You know, I try to be,
yeah,
practical. And I will tell you that the one grain I cheat on a little bit is there are a couple of the Kind bars that have the puffed rice that I do eat once in a while.
Yeah.
Rice is the least problematic of the grains. It doesn't have any proteins that we really tend to have negative reactions to. It is high glycemic, but that's only if you're eating it in large amounts. So there are a couple of
down left and right.
Yeah, there are a couple Kind bars, like there's a sea salt and dark chocolate that's only got 4 grams of sugar, but it does have a little bit of rice in it. I ate one of those yesterday while I was driving, so I don't get too crazy about that. Glucose, non-GMO glucose, is actually a really good sweetener, because what we're trying to stay away from mostly is fructose, and table sugar is half glucose, half fructose. Whereas pure glucose is actually one of the better sweeteners to use if you're trying to, you know, monitor your blood sugar a little closer. So that's, I think that's right. Why they use pure glucose in there. It's pretty unusual. It's fairly expensive. And in order to get a sweet taste, you have to use quite a bit more of it. But it's one of the better sweeteners, so I don't mind seeing the glucose in there at all. The soy lecithin, not a big deal. It's used in a lot of foods. It's used in ice cream to keep it soft. But there's no real negative effects from that. So the kind bars, as long as you stick with the low carb, low sugar, they're not bad.
Like, I would 17 eat grams of carbs in it.
That one's high.
That's pretty high. So try to find a lower carb one then. All right.
Yeah, and some of them are as low as 4. Give you kind of a baseline. I try never to take in more than 15 grams of carbs at one time. You know, my daily limit is 50 to 60 for the whole day, but I try to make sure that any one time I'm not eating more than 15, because that's where you'll get the blood sugar spike from. So, and, you know, again, it's not perfect. You know, if I have to eat 18 or 20 because that's what's available and I'm hungry, I will. The good news is the longer I'm on this, the more control I have over hunger and the easier it is to just say, you know, I'll eat when I can find something later. The bars that I really like, and they take a little getting used to for some people, they're actually meat bars. They're made by a company called Epic, and they don't need refrigeration of any kind. Yeah, Epic. I have found them in some grocery stores. I get them online all the time at Thrive Market. They make like bison and cranberry and beef and habanero cherry. They make a turkey. They make a lamb with mint. They've got a pork. It's a pretty good ratio of fat to protein and virtually very, very low carbs. If they have the dried fruit in them, they have a little bit of carbs, but they're really satisfying. You know, when you're ketogenic and you're looking for that fat, they're very satisfying.
My other question was, as far as meats are concerned, what do you prefer, beef or pork? Because pork has a bit more fat to it. And they don't use the antibiotics in pigs as they do with cows,
right? Yeah, pork is. I probably eat a lot of pork for those reasons. It's got a higher fat content. It is easier to find it, you know, with no hormones, no antibiotics, that kind of stuff. So. And it's yummy. I mean, who doesn't like, you know, bacon and pulled pork? And I mean, that's just good stuff. Sausage. So pork is a good meat. Now, grass-fed beef has a lot of nutrition. You know, it's got good omega-3s. It's got a lot of trace minerals we don't get elsewhere. So the one thing you've got to look for, too, is variety. So pork is a go-to. I eat pork just about every day. I eat grass-fed beef when I can get it. You know, when you're on the road, forget it. I mean, you're just not going to find grass-fed beef in most places.
Because I go to Walmart, and all I could do. So that's the reason why I'm kind of asking these questions.
Yeah, now the other thing, if you can find it and if you like it, organ meats are the best you can eat. I mean, they are... Organ meats like liver, kidney, heart, sweetbreads.
Kind of breaking up. I'm losing you.
Okay.
Evan?
Yeah. I think I'm going to put you back on hold. The organ meats, if you can get them, or if you like them. So one of the things I've been doing that works really well is I'll take grass-fed beef liver and bacon and ground beef, grass-fed ground beef. And I'll put it all in a food processor and kind of make like a sausage patty or a hamburger patty out of it. And that's, a great way to get a ton of nutrition. Let's go to Kentucky. Rod, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Got a couple questions for you. First, the FlowBlow system with the wheel covers and stuff, do they fit, will that all work on, like if you use the 2-inch singles, you know, the 2-inch offset singles that are flipped around backwards, will them fit on there, or do you have to do a little rigging to make them fit on? Because that offset is a little bit different.
That's a good question, and I haven't had that one yet, and I haven't thought about it, but thinking through the system, they should fit just fine.
Okay, because, you know, when you got them on there backwards, your hub sticks out a little bit further in the center of the wheels. I didn't know if they'd hit the wheel covers or not, or if you'd have to make your own brackets or something to get them on there.
I don't think so, but, boy, I don't know that for sure. I am making a note of that, and I'm going to check with them on that.
Yeah, that might be something to have them start making the brackets special for that.
Yeah.
Next one is on the scan gauge. I picked one up the other day.
Hold the thought on the scan gauge. The music just kicked in, and we've got to get to a break. But we will come right back, and we will get to that scan gauge question, so don't go away. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Rod in Kentucky. Rod, go ahead.
A couple days ago, I stopped at the Petro in Oak Grove, Missouri, and picked one up and went out, put it in, did the first just a little initial setup real quick on it, and then went in. I had my check engine light and stuff was on. I shut it off. It cleared all the codes, and then about 10 seconds after it cleared everything out, it popped up another code on the dash or threw up another light. What was dealing with that, it's an 07 Volvo, that TCS, which is a traction control something or other, but threw that light and threw a code up with it, and I couldn't get it to clear off. If you unplug the scan gauge and use the truck, the code would go inactive, and then you could use the truck and clear the code out, and it would disappear. The second you plug the scan gauge back in, it popped the light back on and threw that code again. Is there some kind of issue that you know of with this truck, or could that possibly just been a bad scan gauge in the package?
There isn't a known issue, and it may not be a bad scan gauge. It may just be that the scan gauge is a little more sensitive. The traction control system uses the same sensors as the ABS, and ABS is notorious for throwing codes. You know, something as simple as a wheel bearing just slightly out of adjustment, and we get ABS or traction control codes. Now, is this a scan gauge KR?
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't even know they were selling them at the Petro.
Yeah, they've got them at all the big ones, the Iowa 80s. One in Joplin, Missouri,
it's okay.
An Iowa 80.
Got it. Okay. Do you have anybody else that you know that has a scan gauge KR?
Yeah, actually, a cousin of mine just got one. He should be down here where I'm at in a couple of days. And if he's not got it wired in or too tough to get out, I was going to yank his out, and he just stuck it in there yesterday. So I was going to pull his out and see if it does it with it.
That's the quickest way. If you can just test another one, that's the easiest thing for you to do. And if that code still comes up, then what it's telling us, there's nothing wrong with the scan gauge. It just may be a little more sensitive to that code.
Right. Occasionally, I will get the lights come on for the ABS on the truck. If you hit a bump diff wrong, I've checked all the wheel bearings, everything's right. I think it's just a sensor I need to replace. It'll come on, and I can use the truck, shut the code off, and it goes out. May not come on for another day or two. I didn't know if that might have had something to do with it.
It does. And like I said, ABS is notorious for throwing codes. In fact, we're on our first trip with our coach, and I've got an ABS light on. And I've checked all the sensors, and I can't figure out why. And every once in a while, going down the road, my traction control light will start flashing. And I know they use the same sensor, so I know I've got a sensor issue somewhere. They're just really a pain. They're very sensitive.
Yep, that's what I think. I've got the same thing. So, all right, I'll give his a shot, and if it works, and I'll just, to the stop in there, because they're a little bit more expensive, I'll just call you up and order one from you.
There you go. Sounds great. Let me know how that works out. Let's head off to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Well, I hate to keep calling asking more and more stuff about the health thing, but I'm just having an awful time with this.
Well, let's talk about it.
Okay. I've got an app called Lose It I told you about a week or so ago. So I've been diligent at keeping track of things, and I know how you like numbers, and I do too. It drives my wife crazy, but anyway. For this current week, my daily average in grams for fat is 100. For carbohydrate is 41. It is 80. Am I somewhat close? Do I need to get the fat at 200? I don't know. Just to pull a number out of the sky. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I do. How are you feeling?
You know, I really feel good as far as being tired. I just don't. As far as being hungry, my belly hasn't growled for probably a year. I just don't get hungry. The only time I really can say that I know that I need something is I'll get a dull, funny feeling headache. And I'm guessing that has to do with a drop in blood sugar because I'm empty.
Right.
So I don't have any of that stuff going on. I tried the bulletproof coffee, and I had heard to take it easy on the MCT and the butter at first till you see how your body does with it. So I just did 1 tablespoon of butter, 1/2 tablespoon of coconut oil. And the flavor to me is kind of odd. So I dumped some cocoa in it. You mentioned that the other day. And that was a little odd. So just for kicks and grins, and I know I shouldn't, I throwed some sugar in it just to see what it did to it. I still didn't like the taste. And I thought, I thought, well, that's not going to work. So I thought, well, I'll just ask Kevin and see what he thinks.
Got it. Okay. So there are lots of other, you know, the bulletproof coffee, the reason people like it so much is coffee drinkers, you're going to have a cup in the morning anyway. For me, the butter in coffee is just amazing. I love the taste. I like it with coconut oil, but it is different. If you use straight MCT oil, it doesn't have any flavor at all. So if you're using coconut oil, if that's what's causing the odd flavor, you might want to try to find MCT oil. But you know that the bulletproof coffee isn't necessary. It's just a way to get 3 tablespoons of fat first thing in the morning. And that's your energy source. But you could just as easily put 3 tablespoons of butter on your, you know, eggs or whatever, or, you know, use any fat you want. So, you know, it's not necessary. It's just an easy way for people who like coffee to get their fat in the morning. It sounds to me like you've got the nutrients dialed in really well. I mean, you're feeling good. You are not, you know, you're not hungry. You've got good appetite control. I think you're right. When you feel that little bit of a headache, it could just be that you've forgotten to eat and your blood sugar has dropped. That's not a bad thing. As long as your weight is controlled where you want it, that's, you know, totally up to you, then that's a good thing. Go ahead.
Which that it's not. I am, as you would say, vertically challenged. I'm 5'9 on a good day, and that might be if I raise up a little bit on my toes.
Okay.
I was 306 about 18 months ago. I'm now, I stay 254 to 257 pretty much all the time. And I know that's just more than I should be at almost 5'9". So I'm not where I want to be weight-wise, and I'm sure what I need to do.
Okay, then there's three ways you can, and this is fairly common that people see that big initial weight loss, and then a lot of people hit a plateau. And there's a couple things you can do to get through that plateau. One is you can do some fasting. Will sometimes break through a plateau, like a 24-hour fast once a week will help you break through a plateau. The other thing you can do is focus on the carbohydrates first and the protein second, even more if you're not losing the weight you weigh the way you want to. So instead of 40 grams of carbs, try to get under 20. Now, the good news is, you can replace the lost carbs with fat and you'll still lose weight. So you don't have to go hungry. You don't have to starve yourself. You just have to adjust those macronutrients a little bit again. And the first one to adjust is carbs. If you drop your carbs down under 20, you may even see you start losing weight within a couple days. If you don't, then you may want to adjust the protein a little bit. Those are the easiest ways. The next way is, and this is the one that works the best for me, you don't have to be super active to be healthy in this lifestyle, but activity will help the weight. So for me, if I am active three times a week, so maybe two of those will be a good heavy weight training session, and in only 30 or 45 minutes, it doesn't have to be anything crazy. And then once or twice a week, I will do like a high-intensity aerobic. And this will only be 20 minutes. But it will be something that really pushes the limits for me. Like I will sprint for 30 seconds and then rest for 90 and then sprint for 30 and rest for 90. And I'll do that like eight cycles. That will knock 15 pounds off me in 2 weeks. If I don't do that, okay, and if I get less active, I'll gain the 15 pounds back. Now, either way, I'm at a good body weight, so it's not a big deal. But those are some of the tricks that will help you break through some of those weight plateaus. Give some of those a try, and if it doesn't work, give me a call because there are some other things we can do. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Indiana. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing today, Mr. Rutherford? So while you're at Council Bluffs, are you going to block off my parking space back toward the back in a grassy area so Apollo has a chance to run around?
Sure, we can do that for you. I'll put your name on.
Okay, great thing. Okay, got a couple questions. One on the diet to start with. If somebody is thin to start with and doesn't want to lose weight, how do you keep from the losing of it? What would
you know,
be the key to that?
You know, from what I've found, and this comes mostly from reading, but a little bit of my own experience. So I've never considered myself overweight, but I guess technically I probably was at 180, and I'm only, you know, Herschel talked about being vertically challenged at 5'9". I'm 5'5 on a good day. So, you know, at 180, even though I do carry a pretty good amount of lean muscle mass because I work out a lot, 180, I was probably overweight, no question. Now, when I started this, my weight dropped so fast. And I actually got down my lowest weigh-in at 139. And at 139 pounds, I was about 8% body fat. When I stopped being quite so active, and this is what I talked about on the last call, I'm back up to about 154 or so, which is actually pretty comfortable for me. And all I really had to do was not work out quite so much or eat more. And eating more was actually kind of fun. I mean, it's not, I could eat even when I wasn't hungry. I would just, if I saw something good, I would eat it, whether I was hungry or not. If I don't do that, I tend to get down to that, like, 10% body fat. And now what I've heard from people who started this diet and they're already at 10% body fat or lower, nothing really changes weight-wise. They don't lose any weight because their body is already normalized. See, I believe that for a human being, 10% body fat is probably about normal. That's about where we should be. And when you eat this way, which is a very natural diet, your weight becomes normalized. Well, if it's already normalized, nothing's going to change.
Okay. Yeah, because mine's coming off with leaps and bounds. I'm already down to 205 as of today. And I started off at 250, and we was just worried that she would start losing weight, and she doesn't really want to do that.
No, nope. And here's the beauty of it. You know, the types of foods you eat on this diet are very, very calorie dense. You know, fat has twice as many calories per gram as carbohydrates or protein. So, like I say, if you're at what is a normal body weight, now for a woman, body fat normal is more like about 14 or 15%. So if she's anywhere near that or less, I don't think she's going to see any weight loss. And if she does, just tell her to eat more.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, the second question, I'm just buying my first truck. And I've got a localized mechanic that I've talked to, and he wants, you know, he's willing to work on it for me, doing the smaller stuff. And then I would take to some of the bigger shops for the more major things. But he's talking about a synthetic oil called, I'm horrible with how to pronounce things. It looks
Schaefer.
Like Schaefer's, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R. Is that a good fully synthetic oil?
It is, actually. I was using Schaefer in the last couple of gliders that we built when we were on the road full-time and we were building the gliders and using them. I was using Schaefer, and I really liked it a lot. We actually talked about partnering with them at one point, kind of making Schaefer the official oil. The problem I keep running into on oil is I can't point to any definitive proof that one oil is better than another. I mean, I liked it. It worked great. I got good fuel economy. My oil samples came back great. But I can also do that with Rotella. And I've done it with Royal Purple. And I liked it. And all the results were good. But if somebody were to really question me and say, well, Kevin, prove to me that Schaefer is better than
Rotella synthetic. I have a hard time doing that. I can't come up with the proof on oil to show that one is absolutely better than another. On all the products we represent, I represent them for a reason. We've done a lot of testing, and I can say this is better and this is why. And on oil, we've been approached by, I mean, even the big oil companies have wanted to be a part of the show, and they've got more money than they know what to do with. And I've had to tell them, I don't know how I can partner with an oil, because I don't know how to tell somebody it's better than any other oil.
Well, how do you tell that it's a fully synthetic and not something that is, you know, they put oil and then just added a little bit of synthetic and say, okay, now it's synthetic?
I don't want to say they can't do that. There are some regulations and rules, but if it's synthetic, it's synthetic. If it's a blend, it will be labeled a blend. So if they are using conventional oil, but it has some synthetic stock in it, then they'll call it a blend. If they are calling it full synthetic, then it by law, sort of, it's not supposed to have any conventional stock in it.
Okay. Sounds good. Those were my two questions today. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We've got some time here. Let's go to Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple of questions for you. First one is about alternators. I recently replaced the alternator in my truck, and I was presented with a question when I purchased, and did I want a brushless or a conventional alternator? And I know brushless is better, but why is it better?
Well, it's not better in every way, and here's why. Brushless alternators tend to fail less often. They last longer, they fail less often, so a lot of people look at them as being better in that sense. I believe, and from what I've read, they don't charge our batteries as well as a brushed alternator does. It's a different type of charge, and so you may not get the same battery life. But there's not a lot of really good data on this, and part of the reason is it's very difficult to test because batteries get treated so differently. Like you might have a brushless alternator, and your buddy who, you know, you guys do the same thing every day, he might have a brush, and your batteries might end up lasting longer, which would be the opposite of what I just told you. But the reason could be for 10 other things that are happening. You know, you hardly ever discharge your batteries completely, and he discharges his constantly and recharges them, and that'll wipe out batteries. So it's one of those things that there are so many variables, sometimes it's hard to see this in the real world, kind of the trade-off. The brushless will tend to fail less often and last a little longer, the alternator itself, but the way it charges our batteries isn't quite as good as a brushed.
Okay. Well, I guess I made the right decision because I went with the brushless and I run an APU, so I don't really worry too much about discharging the batteries too much.
I think that was a good choice.
Well, good guess.
There you go.
My second question is about hoses. I was talking to a friend today, and I've had a decent amount of hose failures over the last month and a half. And I have like the silicone style hoses, and they were asking me, why don't I just replace them with rubber hoses? And I know that silicone tends to last longer than the rubber hoses. And she asked me why they lasted longer, and I was guessing at the answer. I'm making the assumption that the silicone is better because it handles the heat better.
Let me get to the break. The music's playing, and I'll come back, and we'll talk about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. if you need any help from us off the air, you can always give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Ross. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. That means at the end, I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we'll come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get back to the calls. I was talking with John in Ohio. So, John, there's a couple reasons. Heat is one of them. The other one is rubber is a petroleum product.
Okay.
So when we run petroleum through it, we do have the factor that the petroleum will eventually disintegrate that rubber. Whereas silicon is usually impervious to petroleum, they're not the same. Whereas as rubber has petroleum in it, so it can degrade faster. So what kind of failures are you having on the silicone hoses?
One of them was just the rub through, and that was just I had some work done on the truck, and when they put it back together, they just put it back together where it was rubbing up against something and it just rubbed the hole. The other one is that the hose that goes back to my APU is relatively close to the turbo and the exhaust, and I know it's getting pounded with heat and it actually split lengthwise. The hose is, you know, 4.5 years old. I'm not horribly upset about it, knowing what type of heat cycles I'm putting it through.
Yeah.
I wish there's a better way to run it. And quite honestly, I've kind of just rigged it up to put it together and keep running. When I get back home, I'm going to really tear everything apart. I'm just going to replace all the hoses, all the clamps, and really try to spend some time thinking about how can I rerun it, even if I have to run it a little further out of the way, to keep it away from those heat sources.
That's a much better idea, because the recommendation to switch from silicon to rubber wouldn't have solved either one of your problems. I mean, the rubber hose would have actually failed sooner in both those cases.
Right. And that's why, I mean, no matter what, I want to go with the silicone hose because I know they're longer lasting. But if I can avoid having an issue by just moving it, and so what, I have another 2 or 3 feet of hose, it doesn't matter in a system. So I think that's probably a better long-term way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're on the right track with that. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. I would like you to look at an oil sample for me, please.
All right. Tell me a little bit about the truck. What year is it?
It's a 2012 Volvo with a Cummins motor.
Okay, so we've got a 2012 ISX. How many samples or how long have you been sampling?
This is the second sample since I own the truck. The only thing that's wrong on the sample is the viscosity grade. It's supposed to be a 540. They have it listed as a 530, so that'll change with some of my viscosity issues. But this is since I've owned the truck. I've ran the OPS on it since the day I owned it.
Okay, and are you Are you experiencing any kind of maintenance issues or performance issues that I should be looking for in the sample, or is everything seem to be doing okay?
Nope. Everything seems to be okay. We looked at, you did my last oil sample for me, and we had some of the potassium. I used absolutely no coolant, and we weren't sure about the boron last time it listed high. This time it went away. I'm just kind of concerned with the aluminum being high and then the potassium being high again as well.
Okay. So the good news about potassium is we just really don't care if it's high by itself. Potassium being high by itself, I can't remember a single case where that was ever an issue. If it shows up on its own, it is almost always some sort of an environmental contaminant. We're getting it from the outside somewhere. In one case, the guy, we kept getting these crazy high potassium numbers, and he actually, one of his regular stops was at a chemical plant, and it turns out there was tons of potassium in the air.
And all I run is the Northeast, and they run that potassium chloride on the road every chance that
there you go.
It rains.
Yep.
So I wasn't sure about that, but the aluminum started to scare me at only 47,000 miles in this oil sample.
Let me check here. All right. What aluminum number are you seeing? I want to make sure.
I'm seeing 24 for the aluminum. My iron, I'm showing as a 25, aluminum 24.
All right. So let me get to the. I don't think I had the most current sample. Let me. So aluminum can be a concern on an ISX. You know, on an ISX, we're always worried about the top end. Let me take a look here. You know, I wonder what that is. That's a little odd to see aluminum that high. But I'm not seeing any reason why we should be seeing it that high. So I think what we're probably going to want to do on this one is keep an eye on it. We had 11.
It seemed a little high. What I figured I was going to do, so this was the that first sample that you see in there was the conversion from conventional mineral oil over to synthetic. Figured we might have had a little bit of, you know, leftover. I'm going to run it another 25,000, and then I'm going to completely change it. But it just kind of, the numbers started to concern me. Do I have, you know, rings wearing? Do I got a cylinder wall score? And what do I got going on with the aluminum?
When was the last time somebody was in the top end on this?
The overhead was set just before the first oil sample was taken.
So
so it's been 50,000 since the overhead.
Okay, was that a Cummins shop that did it?
Yes, it was.
And nobody said there was any concern with any of the components on the top end.
No, I had them check they pulled the lower end apart. They checked the bearings. They checked the cam lobes. There was nothing of any concern. And I had that done before I bought the truck.
Yeah, you know, this isn't high enough that I would be horribly worried yet. I think you're doing the right thing, and I think what we need to do is just monitor this one.
Okay, just kind of monitor it and go from there.
Yeah, there's no obvious reason why it's happening, and I don't want you to spend a ton of money because we're not at the level yet that's really hurting anything. So let's just see where this goes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your time and your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. You know, I'm heading into a break, so I'm going to take this into the break. And when we come back, I'm going to get to more of your calls and questions. You know, I know it still feels like it's middle of summer, but it really is time to think about your taxes and your accounting. It's something you should be thinking about all the time, but I know people don't. When you run a business, taxes and accounting are a very, very important part. I'd love it if we could get the Fair Tax enacted, and then we could at least just say accounting is an important part. But right now, taxes and accounting are critically important if you're in business. It's not something you can ignore. I've been doing accounting for owner-operators since 1990, lots and lots of years. So I know the trends. In the summertime, nobody wants to think about their taxes or accounting. But you've got to start. We're really going to be in fall before you know it. The year's going to be over. And if you don't have good accounting numbers, you are losing a lot of money. You are leaving a lot of money on the table. Get your accounting in order. You know, if you were to do a profit gauges startup right now, you would be able to go back and put in the entire year, January right up till now. It'll only cost you $25. And then you'll be ready, and you'll know your business better. So check it out. Go to the website at letstruck.com or give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. Don't put it off. It really is way past time. Go get it done. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Ruff. All right, we're going to do a second hour. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. Many times one of our listeners will help out, and if you stump us all, I'll make it my mission to go find that answer. We are, you know what? I'm going to get to the calls here in just a couple minutes. I do want to tell you about the CMC 2016. You don't want to miss this event. Let me just start with that. I could talk about this for hours, but I'm just going to give you a quick rundown. We've been doing the CMC now for 10 years. Great, great program. People love it. They keep coming back. But for the last 3 years, we have been totally sold out with a huge waiting list. And we had a couple things. We had to fulfill our contract at the location we were at, and they were just out of space. And we wanted to make sure that we didn't grow the event too big, too fast, and lose the quality of the experience. And we are now ready to take this event to the next level. We have made a huge commitment, and we have moved it to a full-blown convention center. We have booked the entire convention center for a week. We have a stadium. We have a convention floor. We have tons of meeting room space. We have all kinds of parking. We are not short anything. We have set an initial limit of 500 people. For the last 3 years, we've done 225. And that's all the room we had. So this is a big jump up in the number of people. But we have the resources. We have the staff. We know we can do 500. If we hit 500 early enough, we might be able to expand bigger. But I've got to make sure we've got the resources to handle it. We need time to do that. We are actually, it's still more than 8 months away from the event, but we are already making trips out to Council Bluffs, Iowa, which is where the event is going to be, at the Mid-America Center. We are already making trips out there to start getting ready. So we know the space, how we're going to use it, all those things. So this is a big event for us, takes a lot of time to prepare for. We have more speakers coming this year. We have more topics. We will be able to accommodate anybody in the industry, whether you are brand new day one, or you've been doing this for 40 years and you want to build a fleet, anybody in between, you already have a fleet. This event is for you. This is pure education. Now there's some entertainment, but it is, this isn't like a truck show where you wander around and people try to sell you a lot of stuff. This is a place where you can come to get the absolute best information available in the industry on how to make money. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. It doesn't matter what we're teaching. We teach it with one thought in mind. How do you become more profitable in this industry? That's what it's all about. And like I say, we are covering everything from somebody brand new in the industry to building a very successful fleet. If that is your goal, you don't want to miss this. There is no other event like this anywhere. Like, you know, I'm going to be speaking at the Great American Truck Show. I'm going to be doing two seminars. They're only 1 hour each. At the CMC, I do 35 hours myself. That doesn't include all the time Bruce Mallinson does and Mike Beckett does and George Gallimore does on sales and negotiation, and Larry Winget comes in, and we're looking at adding even more speakers and trainers to the lineup. This is your only real opportunity to get good, solid business education in the trucking industry, and we would love to have you there. We still have room. We still have an early sign-up special, and we are offering the payment option, which makes it very easy to get signed up right now. It'll only cost you about $100, and then you can make payments on it and join us next May. I'll give you the dates, May 16th through the 20th of 2016. We are in Council Bluffs, Iowa at the Mid-America Center. And you don't want to miss this. Get signed up right now. Two ways you can do it. You can go to the website, letstruck.com, look under the events tab, and you can register right online yourself. Or you can give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We can answer any questions you have, and if you decide to, we can get you registered. We're going to get to the phones. Let's start off today in Oklahoma. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, Kevin?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
First, I'd like to just say thank you for everything that you're doing. You have really, really made me pretty knowledgeable about this business, and I'm just learning more every time I hear you every day. It's like getting punched in the ear with awesome every day, and I love it.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I've got a lot of your products. I've got a scan gauge, and I'm not really sure that I'm reading it right. I'd like to get some counsel on that as far as what I'm seeing and what I should be seeing.
Okay. Let's start with that. There are a couple of the readouts that I really like to use on the scan gauge. The most important for me really is that instant fuel mileage. And the one thing that we changed, you know, instant fuel mileage gauges have been around forever. You know, Detroit had one, CAT had one, Volvo has one. But the problem was, when I drove with all of those, they didn't help me at all. And I figured out the reason why, because they change too fast. They read that fuel mileage every second, and it changes so fast you can't learn anything from it. So we played around with ours, and we eventually came up with a 7-second rolling average. So it slows down that fuel mileage a little bit, and we can see what happens when we do something different. So if I'm watching that gauge, and it takes time, it's not instant, but if I'm watching that gauge, and let's say I'm on the level and nothing's changing much and it's holding pretty steady at 6.8, and let's say I'm in 13th gear going 58 miles an hour and my tach is at 1200. Well, if I, let's say I've got a 13 speed, I downshift a half a gear, and all of a sudden my RPMs come up, but my fuel mileage goes from 6.8 to 7.1. Well, that's a positive change. And what it tells me is when I'm on the level, this truck likes to run at a little higher RPM. Now, think of all the different situations, wind, road, terrain, weight. The more we play around with it, the more we're going to learn. I mean, I've been driving for fuel economy for 25 years, and I've been using the scan gauge for a couple years now since we developed it, and I still learn. I mean, it's just an ongoing thing. So don't get too frustrated if you're not learning right away, but what you want to do is note your fuel economy at any given time and then try something different and see okay. what it does. Like when you're going through the gears, this is one of the ones that I learned. I used to let my auto shift go through the gears because the engineers told us they already worked all this out and the truck can shift better than you can for fuel economy. And you know what? I believed them until I got my scan gauge. And I watched my fuel economy letting the auto shift go through the gears. And then I started driving it myself, shifting it manually, and I could double the fuel economy. I could get twice as good as the auto shift on its own, but it took time playing around with shift points and things like that. So even on a manual transmission, you can watch your scan gauge go through the gears the way you normally do, and then go through the gears doing something different, like really working hard at progressive shifting, or work hard at only using half as much throttle. And there's another gauge you can put up to help you with that. It's marked TPS. That stands for throttle position sensor. And it, it tells you what position your throttle is in. So if you normally go through the gears and it's at one position, try going through the gears and keeping it lower than that and watch what happens to your fuel economy. So there's a thousand ways we can use this, but that kind of gives you an idea. I'm going to get to a break. I know you've got more, so don't worry. I'm going to come back to you. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letcom. I'm going to get back to the calls. I was talking with John in Oklahoma. So, John, does that help some?
Oh, that's fantastic. That's pretty much what I've been doing, but to kind of sum it all up, that helped quite a bit. I got a couple more if you got time. I ordered a sample or an OPS from you, got it installed, and I'm fixing to pull my first sample. Now, in the box, they come with a couple of little small jugs. I'm assuming that's what the oil goes in, but I didn't see anything to put that in to mail it to Polaris. Do I need to do that by myself, or did I just not get one in the box?
You know, you should have gotten a mailer. Every time we send a sample, we send mailers. So call us up.
I'll look back through it. Maybe I just overlooked it.
Yeah, check, and if not, call us, and we'll get them out to you.
Okay, and the next thing is, on this truck, I've got a 98 Century 12.7 Meritor 10. I've got singles on it, just flipped them around backwards yesterday and got wild that I get some looks. And one guy said, how are you going to keep that truck from tipping over? I was like, well, if I'm tipping over just by flipping these, I got bigger problems than just tires.
You know, I love that answer because that's what I tell people. That's the same thing. If that little bit of if you are that close to tipping over that this is going to make the difference, then you need to go find another career. Uh-oh. John, did I lose you? John? John, going. Well, I'll put you back on hold. We'll see if we can save that line. I'm not sure what happened. Let's go to Georgia. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Coming to you today from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. I'm over here at Cantwell Power looking at a beautiful brand new Fitzgerald Glider Columbia. Man, this thing is gorgeous. Got the exhaust pipe coming straight from under the truck right to the stack like God intended.
That's right. You know, the other thing I love about the Fitzgerald Gliders, they're so clean in the way that they're built, the way all the lines are run, and they, you know, it's so nice to open the hood of a new truck and just see that simple engine sitting in there without all the junk.
Oh, yes, sir. And I'll tell you, someone's going to make a lot of money with that truck. I'm getting work done on the Volvo, though, and I just want to thank you for the great price on the Flow Blow. I bought it off the letstruck.com website. I ended up saving $220 over even Flow Blow's own website. So that's a huge savings. It's at the paint shop in Memphis now. My mechanic took it in to get it painted. So I'll be picking that up tomorrow and getting that installed. I can't wait. I'll shoot you over a picture of it. But thanks for that. That's a great savings right there.
Well, you're welcome. And, you know, this is one of those win-win situations. You know, when we deal with a lot of companies, and we only partner with companies that we absolutely love their products, and this is one of them. But each individual company that we work with, they basically have one source of revenue. It's their product, and they're not gouging anybody. They have a certain amount of profit they need to make off of every product they sell. When they have dealers, they obviously have to give the dealer a better price, and then the dealer, you know, is able to mark things up so they can make a little money. The win-win the win-win for us is we have lots of sources of revenue, and we don't have to make every penny on everything we sell, so we like to pass those savings on to the end user, so everybody wins. The company that manufactures the product makes a sale, you get a great deal on it, we make a little bit of money, you know, so everybody wins.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited about that. And today I was actually calling, my main concern was about trucker taxes. Now I listen to the NEMO programs in the morning, Tim Ridley and Dave, you know, they're great. And the beginning of the year, they had the CPA on there talking about having to capitalize all of your maintenance expenses over $500. I listened the other day, and I'd been thinking that was the case all along. Apparently, the rules were changed for that. Could you possibly explain that? Because I've done a lot of upgrades to this Volvo, you know, new driver's seat, floor coverings, sleeper carpet, a bunch of upgrades and maintenance and whatnot. And I just wanted to find out what the final rule was and what I'm going to be looking at for 2015.
I don't know where they're getting that number. There has never been a number anywhere that the IRS says that you have to either depreciate this or capitalize this. The general rule, the way it is written, isn't even the way it happens in the real world. But the general rule says anything you buy for your business that lasts longer than 1 year should be depreciated. But nobody does that. Nobody has ever done that. You know, that would mean we would have to depreciate a clutch. Nobody depreciates clutches. We would have to depreciate an alternator. That doesn't make any sense. So we've always stuck with the guidelines of we only depreciate really large ticket items. In fact, in my practice, the only thing we depreciated was the truck purchase itself in frame. We didn't even depreciate transmissions. I mean, if you did an $8,000 transmission, we just expensed it. I mean, I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know where they're finding that in the IRS code, but nobody in the real world is doing that.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate all the information. I'm going to be coming to you guys for my return. I'm signing up for Profit Gauges. And I also wanted to thank you so much for the great audio road programs. That rolling tow program is just a gold mine. I called in for a question. I didn't even have to talk to the guys because my question was answered within 5 minutes of listening. And I'm going back to the archives, and I believe there's about 23 shows now, and I'm up to show number 4. I listen to a couple of those a night when I'm running my FedEx loads, and I'll tell you, man, it is just such a great wealth of information. You can stream it right from your phone. No need to buy anything. It's just a huge resource. So thank you so much for that, and y'all keep up the great work, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call and all the compliments. Holy cow, my head's going to get so big I won't be able to get through the door if you keep that up. But we love it as well. I mean, I've always had the dream of building this network. I will tell you it's much, much more challenging than I predicted. I knew it was going to be a lot of work. I knew there would be a lot of challenges, but it's going well. We had to kind of scale back a little bit on how many shows. I was hoping to have 20 shows by the end of the year, and that was way, way too optimistic. And the biggest problem really is finding good hosts. That's our biggest challenge. Everything else we could overcome. Finding really good hosts is the challenge. And it's because there are a lot of people with good information. Well, there aren't a lot, but there are some. But they're not always good on the radio. Or, you know, there are other issues that come up. And then there are people who could be good on the radio, but they don't have the best information. And that's what we're looking for. So we will continue to grow that. We're probably just going to grow it at a slower pace than we had originally planned. But we have lots of ideas. So thanks for the feedback on that. Let's head off to New York. Jeremiah, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What can I help you with today?
I was wondering that you to look at my profit gauges.
All right. Let's take a look at it. Tell me a little bit about your operation.
All right. I have a 2001 Freightliner Century. Leased on to a company out of Pennsylvania, and I do a lot of local, like 2-4 hour trips, you know, out and back, home every, basically almost every night. I've done when I first bought this truck about 2.5 years ago, I only paid $9,000 for the truck, and I had a rebuilt motor in it. And I did a lot of upgrades to it, and see right now my 30-day fuel mileage is 767.
Okay, so I'm kind of smiling and chuckling a little bit here. Did you say you paid $9,000 for the truck?
I paid $9,000 for the truck.
Okay, so. You know, I get people all the time that want to do these crazy lease purchase deals because they just have to have a truck. They don't have any money. They don't have any credit. And they are willing to spend $800 a week on a truck because they can just sign on the line and they get a brand new shiny truck. And if we do the math, in 3 months, they will spend what you spent on this truck. Now, many of those guys are struggling to make 35 or 40 cents a mile after all their expenses, and they're gone weeks or months at a time. When we come back, I want to compare that to what you're doing and just let people know what the opportunities are when you're willing to do the hard work and sacrifice a little bit. So stick around. When we come back, we're going to go over these numbers. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Jeremiah in New York. I'm going to go back to there now. Jeremiah, so here's the thing. You've got a $9,000 truck. You're home, you said, almost every night. This is one of those jobs, for you it's a business, but this is one of those setups that a lot of people in the industry want. They would like to be home more often, certainly every night if they could, and still drive a truck because they love doing that. And many of them, if they do it, they have to give up money usually. You know, you might be able to make $50,000 or $60,000 over the road, and if you go home and haul containers or gas or other things, you know, you usually end up taking a pay cut to do it. With a $9,000 truck, you are going to come very close this year to making $100,000. I mean, that and being home every night in your own bed and not having all those expenses of being on the road, that's amazing. I mean, you're doing $1.63 for all miles. Your fuel cost is 34 cents a mile. Your maintenance cost on an old truck is 13 cents a mile, which isn't bad at all. And you hardly have any other expenses. So you're making 95 cents a mile to your pocket. These numbers are fantastic. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, that actually doesn't even include January. So that's only February through July. So that's for...
Then you're on track to do $100,000 and being home every night with a $9,000 truck. That is amazing. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's, I've listened to you for the last few years, and my previous truck had the emissions and everything on it, and I got rid of that, and then I bought this and did quite a few upgrades in the beginning, but I was still able to bring home 56 cents, net to me for the first year and a half. And so I'm basically done with the upgrades, and I drive 55, and it's...
Well, you can't beat it.
I'm having fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah, these numbers look amazing. So, keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, great stuff. See, when you do the hard work, when you're willing to sacrifice, when you take the time to learn, this is what is possible. In the home every night, there are drivers that would kill for that situation. Making $100,000 a year net with a $9,000 truck. His fuel cost is lower than new trucks. His maintenance cost is lower than new trucks. The only thing you give up is some comfort, but you can even fix that once you've got enough money. Great stuff. Let's go to New York. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing great. What's on your mind today?
As I was telling Kim, I have oil in my coolant, and let's rewind a little bit back. I got an injector put in, and like 2 weeks later, I noticed oil coming into the coolant. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I looked online, seen a whole lot of suggestions, so I wound up changing the oil cooler, and I have washed the I washed the radiator out around 3 times. I did it back to back to back, but now I notice oil is still in there. And I did an oil sample, and it looks like I have coolant in the oil also. It looks like it. The oil sample I sent over has, I think, 46 on the potassium and 39 on the sodium.
And that's a very, very small amount. So
okay.
It's not enough. Now, are you losing coolant?
No, I'm not. I don't think so. But I think it's kind of hard to tell because I'm getting oil in the coolant also. So.
Yeah, but you aren't getting enough oil in the coolant to make up for any real loss of coolant. So I don't think we're losing coolant. If there's any in this oil, it's a very, very tiny amount.
Okay.
I think all we're really going to want to do with this right now is watch it. Because once you get some contamination in the coolant, it's really difficult to get out. And you know, one of the ways that I learned this was when we started using the Evans coolant. When you do that conversion, you've got to get all of the old coolant out of everywhere. And when I saw how, I don't want to say difficult, but how time-consuming that was, you know, you have to disconnect all of the heater cores back in the bunk, every line on the truck, you've got to flush them out, drain them, you've got to chase coolant through there. So when you don't do that and you've got some sort of contamination in there, it can stay in there a very, very long time. And I think maybe that's what you're seeing. So there's nothing in this oil sample that is going to hurt the engine. So when we're looking at a choice of either trying to spend a lot of money to figure this out or just watch and see what happens, what I look at is if we just wait and see, is there any damage that's going to occur? And based on your oil sample, there's no damage. There's no downside to just waiting and watching and seeing what happens with this.
Okay, that sounds good. I definitely appreciate that. Real quick, is there any website? I was listening to you guys on the ketogenic diet. I did listen to Effortless Healing, and I learned a whole lot that I didn't know. But I wanted to know, is there any particular website I can go to actually get a or any suggestions you have for the type of diet? Like, do you have it somewhere on your website? Well, this is what I do on my diet. That's what I was looking for.
I don't yet, just because writing for me is such a challenge, and I've got some other writing projects I'm working on. I plan on doing that, and there are some good resources, and I'm going to point you to those. The difference when I write mine will be directed to how you do this on the road as a truck driver. That doesn't really exist. But you know, most people will figure that out. It, probably one of the best resources on the ketogenic lifestyle is a guy called Jimmy Moore. And he wrote a really good book called Keto Clarity. And that's available on audio, so I would recommend you listen to that. He has a blog that he does a ton of writing, and he's been doing it for over 10 years. And he also has a podcast, and he has, my God, I don't know, maybe thousands of episodes of his podcast. And what he does on his podcast is he almost always interviews other doctors and healthcare professionals about, you know, the real technical side. So, I mean, if you go through his stuff, just Google Jimmy Moore and keto, and you'll go right to his website, and you can see his podcast. And there is so much material there you couldn't get through it in years.
Okay, I sure appreciate everything, and I'll just sit back and watch this motor because the other alternative is just going to the – someone suggested it was the liners, and I was like, well, I don't know, but I'm going to watch it. That sounds a lot better to me.
It doesn't – I mean, if it's liners, there's two things here. If it is a liner, it's very, very minor right now. And the thing is, if it is minor, it's too late to save it. So
right.
I mean, once the liners are shot, even if they're only leaking a little bit, they're still shot. So there's no danger in just waiting. I don't think it's liners. I think we would be seeing much more contamination. It could be, but it's not going to hurt to just wait and see.
Okay, well, I dumped a gallon of Lucas in here just to be safe.
Yeah, that never hurts either. That was a good idea. So stay in touch. Let me know how the next oil sample looks. We'll take a look at it. Let's see. You know what? I'm going to try to squeeze in another call, and we'll carry it through the break if I need to. Let's go to Georgia. Jay, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing today?
Good.
Good, good. Hey, I took your CMC back in 2005 in Nashville when you were doing it at the Holiday Inn. Showed the guys how things changed. We had 25 people in that class. It was a three-day class. And the first day, first session, you told us about what kind of trucks that you buy. You compared a 379 Peterbilt to a Volvo. And based on what you told us, I went and bought a brand new 780 with a 500 ISX 13-speed. 356 rears and 24.5 low pro tires. Okay.
Wow. Hey, hold that thought. The music's playing. I got to get to a break. CMC 05. I remember that one in Nashville. Well, I remember them all, but that's exciting. Stick around. We'll be right back for Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Jay in Georgia. Jay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the issue I have is this. You told us when you buy a brand new truck, you want to go 1,000,000 miles with it. And the most important thing at the end of 1,000,000 miles is not the miles, but how much fuel did you burn? Well, I got 1.19 million miles on it right now. I changed it all over 15,000 miles. And I get oil samples run as well. The latest sample came back. My potassium has jumped from 3 parts per million up to 82. I'm sorry, 78, excuse me. The sodium has jumped from 3 parts per million up to 82.
Okay.
Cummins took a look at it, diagnosed it, and I said, why are you going to change the head gas? What they said it was, what else can you do while you're in there? They indicated they could go ahead and change the liners and what have you. I said, do a blow-by test. I got 5 inches of water blow-by on the engine right now. So I'm thinking...
That's it?
Go ahead. Pardon? That's it.
That's low, really low for an engine with that many miles on it.
Not only that, I have the original injector still in there.
Wow.
I got
that
one,
is fantastic.
Fuel 1.21 soot, which we look at for injector changes. Now, my question is this. By the time I do an in-frame and add things like the water pump and the crankshaft damper, new injectors and what have you, I'm right there at the cost of a crate motor. What are your thoughts of a crate motor from Cummins opposed to doing an in-frame?
You know, it's kind of a toss up. If you run the numbers and they're that close, I think I would do the crate motor. Now, you've run the numbers as far as labor and everything, right?
Yeah, we're talking 27.4 for a 565 opposed to my 500 because it has the same power parts in there. I'll get a 2-year warranty. They're talking about 40 hours of labor at $5,000 to swing it in. It takes 4 days to swing it in opposed to a week and a half on in frame. You get a 2-year, 250,000-mile warranty on the crate motor. You get 90 days on the doggone labor and a year on the parts with the in frame.
So on the surface, it seems like kind of a slam dunk. We do the crate motor. Here's my only concern, and I'm not going to have an answer for you on this because I don't have a crystal ball.
Okay.
You've got a very good motor.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to get rid of that? You know, it's my only concern. And again, we don't have a crystal ball. Some engines, just like some trucks, for whatever reason, get manufactured and they're better than the truck right next to it. You know, and engines are the same way. And that crate motor could be just as good as the one you've got, or it could be one of those problem engines. On the other hand, they could create problems in yours if they do something wrong. That's why there's so many unknowns here, but that's my only concern is that you've got one of the... Now, it also probably has a lot to do with the way you drove it and took care of it. So, and that's going to happen no matter which engine you get. This is one of those really difficult questions, but the good news is I don't think there's any huge downside either way.
Okay. See, I had asked Cummins, can you just take what I have now and take it back to the factory and rebuild it? But they do that in Mexico, and they were concerned about being able to track it, get it through the system, and get it back to me.
Right,
so they
kind of right.
When that, go to the local guy, have the local guy do it. Since day one, only Cummins touches the engine, only Volvo touches the chassis. Period.
Well, you've done a lot of things right, and it's paid off for you. So I don't think I would sweat this decision too much. I would go with whatever your gut is telling you on this one.
I'm picking the crate motor.
Okay.
New heads, cams, everything is new.
There you go. You'll be just fine.
Yep, 10 more years, another 1,000,000 miles out of it.
There you go.
Okay. Hey, thanks much. Appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And thanks for the long time continued support. Somebody who was back in the CMC, you know, over a decade ago. I really appreciate that kind of support. Let's head off to Iowa. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I am going to make a jump to change my rear end ratios. And I've got 355s now, and I'm going to 279s. If I change nothing else in my operation, I might blew my 279s. What kind of fuel mileage increase am I? I mean, real world. I know what the MicroBlue says, but what are some? I mean, I want to be consciously optimistic, I guess.
You know, I would say you're going to see between 3 5/10, and I tend to lean towards the 3. And when I say I lean towards the 3, what I'm talking about is if I'm going to budget for this and I'm looking at my return on investment, my break even, I always want to go to the low side of what we expect. And then if I get more, it's just a bonus. So if you sit down and crunch numbers on this, I would do the numbers based on just 3/10 gain.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll do then.
Yeah, and there's a good chance you're going to get more, but I really like to stay on the low side when we do those numbers. And then if we get better, it's just a bonus, and we're excited. Let's go to Oklahoma. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I had a question on what do I need to do or how do I get started on that keto lifestyle?
Okay, I've got some answers for you on this. So you haven't made any real changes in the way you eat or drink right now, right?
No, I'm thinking of stair-stepping the carbs down, so it isn't quite so a drastic change,
yeah.
But I don't know.
That's a good way to do it. Let's start with beverages. Are you drinking anything during the day that has sugar in it, including any kind of fruit juices?
Usually coffee with about 2.5 teaspoons of sugar to a 12 cup mug.
Okay, so stop
water.
That. Yeah, that's the first thing to stop, because that is just pure sugar hitting your bloodstream, and it's the easiest thing to get rid of. So if you can just go cold turkey and drink your coffee without it being sweet at all, then do that. If you have to use an artificial sweetener in the beginning, try stevia. It's a natural sweetener, but very, very low glycemic. In fact, zero glycemic. But again, if you can just start drinking your coffee without any sugar, then do that. I mean, that already cuts sugar right out of your diet, and liquid sugar is the worst. So that's a great place to start. Then look at any just pure sweets that you're eating. You know, if it's candy or even things like dried fruit, those are just really, really high in sugar. This is kind of like fuel mileage. You know, we want to pick the low-hanging fruit, no pun intended, first. We want to do the easiest things where we get the biggest result. So, you know, start with liquid sugar. Eliminate that out of your diet completely. And you can even do that slowly if you need to. You know, instead of 2 or 2.5, do 1. Or, you know, stair-step that down, but focus on that. Then focus on the empty calorie sweet stuff that you're eating, typically like candy or even things like yogurt can sometimes be really high in sugar, or breakfast cereals. You know, get rid of those. You know, sometimes people say breakfast is the hardest on this. I think it's the easiest. We have gotten to the point where we eat so many carbs for breakfast, it's insane. You know, we eat cereal, which is loaded. We eat a bagel or muffin or toast, which is loaded with carbs. Then we have a glass of orange juice, which is just carbs on top of carbs. And all we have to do is switch to coffee with no sweetener, bacon, sausage, eggs, all of those things that we used to eat for breakfast. And we've just cut out, you know, a third of our carbs for the whole day. And yet we can still eat really good food. So that's where I would start. And then when you're ready, I think the next biggest thing you can do for your health is to eliminate grains completely. Now, that's a big step. But when you eliminate grains, not only do you eliminate a lot of carbs out of your diet, but you eliminate a lot of other things that are causing problems. All the proteins, the gluten, I could just go on and on. So once you can kind of get your carbs a little under control, then make the bigger step of going grain-free, and you'll be 90% of the way there. Music playing. I'm all out of time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Buffett. All right, everybody, thanks for joining me, and don't forget, later on today, Destination Health will be on. No? Oh, sorry. Okay, Destination Health is not on today. So we will see you here this weekend for the live show. Thanks for joining me.